In 2012, we spoke with Public Radio's Kurt Anderson about his novel, True Believers, whose main character, a female judge, has diabetes, as Kurt does. Listeners, especially diabetics, including my guy, Lore, were thrilled to see Kurt expose some of the myths about diabetes and some of the real challenges. One wrote of calling 911 in 1984 to help a friend, a type 1 diabetic, whose pancreas simply doesn't produce life-saving insulin to manage blood sugars, so she injected insulin, but had injected too much and was slipping away. Our listener begged the EMTs for something, orange juice, to bring her back, but the EMTs were convinced diabetics couldn't have sugar. In more recent years, our house had to call 911, and while I tried to get some orange juice down my guy's throat, the dispatcher told me not to. Nothing to drink till the ambulance comes, she said, but that would be too late. We decided to reprise our talk with Kurt Anderson, starting with his first thought about being a type 1 diabetic.
It wasn't our fault. It's not a result of lifestyle choices or anything else. It's simply some still mysterious combination of genetics and environment that cause your pancreas to go kerflooey at some point.
There's nothing you could do. The pancreas is shot.
It's gone. So you, as a result, if you manage it well, you test your blood many, many times a day and inject insulin accordingly to try to do what your pancreas isn't.
And by the way, we always hear from people when we use words like fault to distinguish type 1 from type 2, people who have type 2 who say, well, wait a second, it's not, you know, fault is a bad word because sometimes they have a complicated medical condition called insulin resistance. You know this, right? But just to have said
I know all that and I understand that. And I was being somewhat tongue-in-cheek.
Right.
And there are tens of millions of people with type 2 diabetes, which is the more familiar one that is skyrocketing in incidence. And there are only 1 million or 2 million people in the United States with type 1.
And sometimes the people with type 2 can, through lifestyle changes, reverse theirs. Those are some of the distinctions. And so you have your character. Go to the first thing that jumped out. This idea that people with diabetes might have mood swings because of the high and low blood sugar. I mean, people know that themselves. If they don't have diabetes, you can get just sort of different moods if you eat a lot of sugar or if you haven't eaten enough. And yet for the diabetic, they're not sure if the mood is because they really feel the mood or if it's because of the diabetes. And further, they're insulted if someone else assumes it's because of the diabetes.
Those are all possibilities. Yeah, it's mostly low blood sugar that causes significant and problematic moods. Often when people are trying to control it too tightly, inevitably sometimes you overdo and you become hypoglycemic. And yes, it is biochemically the same thing that some people feel when they've missed a meal or two and get cranky. A friend of mine the other day was talking to me about this. He was unaware of the nature of my constant blood checking and all that and said, wow, I'm kind of jealous. I said, really, what? He said, I would love to be able to take a drop of my blood anytime I'm feeling angry or beleaguered and thereby have the objective answer of whether it's actual emotion or just some fluke of my blood chemistry. And of course, people say, oh, diabetes, it's treatable. It's this chronic disease and it's treatable. And that's all true and that's fine. But it is also, in this sort of hour-to-hour, day-to-day way, a thing that requires, you know, management and, as I depict in this fiction, has these subjective effects that, you know, are invisible to the world.
But also, it's one thing to be aware yourself, oh, you know, I might be getting cranky because I'm low. But then, if people around you know you're a diabetic, they might try to rob you of real feelings. And has that happened to you where someone says, oh, you come on, you're just getting a little low or something when you really feel something?
Of course. And there's nothing more annoying than that or than the people, well-intended people around you who say, oh, are you low? I've never thought of it as robbing me of real feelings.
Well, your character does. She's like, wait a second.
Yes, she does. Yeah. And, you know, this sense of being infantilized, you know, and treated as a kid who isn't aware of his or her own emotions or state of wellness.
Right. Because of that fear that someone's just going to assign my feelings to my diabetes, a lot of people don't tell people. Your character does. I mean, makes a point of that. Do you? I mean, you are now.
Well, I am now. No, I've never denied it. And like my character, I'm pretty brazen in pulling out the works and shooting up in the middle of restaurants and so forth. So, you know, and I didn't do this in order to, like, achieve sympathy or anything else. I just thought it was an interesting thing for a character in fiction to be, because only in fiction can you really get inside somebody's head and suggest how this – feels how this is, how it is part of, you know, somebody's life.
At one point, the character does relay something, again, very familiar to people with type 1 diabetes, an experience where she had to call 911.
Yeah, well, in that case, actually, as I tell it in the story, her teenage daughter has to call 911 because she's gone into sort of a coma.
Her arms flailing. Luckily, her daughter hears a noise and goes into the room and discovers her and calls 911. So, Kurt Anderson, do you have 911 stories?
I've had, you know, a couple, three serious experiences. Not for many years, knock wood. As I say, I've been doing this for more than 20 years, and in the first few years, yeah, it was figuring out what was what and exactly the combination of food and medicine and exercise and all the rest
sure.
that one needed to do to keep on the straight and narrow.
Well, look, I'm going to share one. My guy, who has diabetes, type 1, same as you, and something I've learned is that, I mean, I pray I don't ever get it because I just think you have to be so on top of things, including knowing that there's a long-term insulin that you might take at night, and
right.
then there's shorter term. And at least in his case, the bottles looked exactly the same except for a tiny dot. And so one night he mixed them up. And the next thing I know, the phone rings at about 2:30 in the morning. I'm like, answer your phone. Will you answer your phone? And he can't answer the phone because he's practically in a coma, as you said. And, you know, we call the emergency services, and thank goodness they're able to bring him back with some orange juice. People think you need insulin when you go into this situation. You don't. You need sugar.
It's the opposite. You need sugar of some
right.
sort. Yeah.
And you want to know something? You know, hours later, we're thinking, wait a minute, who was on the phone? It was a butt call.
Wow.
And you know what else? It happened a second time with a butt call at like 2:30 in the morning, and the phone rang, alerted us to the fact that he was slipping into a coma. So, you know,
that's bizarre.
It is, but it just underscores people who think, you just manage it. No, I was told by the EMTs, happens all the time. A huge amount of their calls come from diabetics. You know, some just have gotten their science off.
Well, exactly. And it is this, as you say, this complicated playing doctor thing of these different vials, multiplication of to figure out the sort of algorithm that you're, okay, this is 3 hours ago, I ate 2 hours from now. You know, yeah, it's complicated. And I'm lucky I'm good at math. My wife often says to me, I wouldn't be able to do this. It's a constant thing. But again, as chronic conditions go, I mean, I'd choose this over many, many, many others I could name.
There you go. But this idea of being more public about it, I've looked in all these online chat places, and all these people are talking and saying things recently, saying things like, gee, has anybody ever felt cranky, or does anyone know about mood swings? Do you think people are told about this, you know, in the diabetic community?
Yeah. I don't know, and I don't spend a lot of time on websites or reading books about this. But yeah, I know when I was diagnosed, my endocrinologist, to be frank, did a terrible job of letting me know what this might mean and how to really manage this. And, you know, that was some years ago, but I'm sure there are still doctors who do a terrible job of letting people know how to deal with it.
On the other hand, the people that I know with type 1 diabetes, and I can now add you to that list, are some of the most achieving, successful people I know. And so I don't know if it's just keeping ahead of that thing chasing you. I don't know.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I did well in school and was having a perfectly good career before I was diagnosed. But for me, it marked a certain kind of end of youth where I could just galump through life thinking, oh, everything will be okay. It really required me to focus on all of the things, you know, exercise, diet, blah, blah, blah. And you can live a full and happy and fulfilling life. But it is this thing that kind of connects you to your mortality when you're 33 years old in a way that is sobering and chastening.
That's Kurt Anderson, host of WNYC Studio 360 and author of the 2012 book True Believers, with a diabetic in a starring role. And after that talk, we heard so many listeners say people think they're drunk or on drugs when they're having low blood sugar episodes and need sugar. And since then, they've also told us of apps, technology attached to the body that can send a warning smartphone call, say to a parent of a diabetic away at college, when sugar plunges. We'd love to hear from you now. Share your stories of living with diabetes.